Please take a moment for prayer and meditation. Amid all the noise in our lives, we take this moment to sit in silence, to give thanks for another day, to give thanks for all those in our lives who have brought us warmth and love, to give thanks for the gift of life. We know we are on our pilgrimage here, but a brief moment in time. Let us open ourselves here now to the process of becoming more whole, of living more fully, of giving and forgiving more freely, of understanding more completely the meaning of our lives here on this earth. As we enter this sacred silence, may our truest selves transcend the dissonance of daily distractions. As we join the spiraling, infinite dance, pulsing unseen throughout all creation, so may it be.
Our ancient reading today is from the book of Genesis, chapter 45, verses 4 through 8. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "Come closer to me." And they came closer. Joseph said, "I am your brother, Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are 5 more years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to the Pharaoh and lord of his house and ruler of all the land of Egypt." Our modern reading is Sea Fever by John Masefield. I must down to the sea again, to the lonely sea in the sky, and all I ask is a tall ship and a star to steer her by, and the wheels kick and the wind song and the white sails shaking and a gray mist on the sea's face and a gray dawn breaking. I must down to the seas again, for the call of the running tide is a wild call and a clear call that may not be denied. And all I ask is a windy day with the white clouds flying and the flung spray and the blown spume and the seagulls crying. I must down to the seas again, to the vagrant gypsy life, to the gull's way and the whale's way, where the wind's like a whetted knife. And all I ask is a merry yawn from a laughing fellow rover, and quiet sleep and a sweet dream when the long trick's over.
So I came up with the title for today's sermon before I actually wrote the sermon itself, so there may be a little bit of disconnection between what I'm about to say and what the title is. But given that this is the summer and the season of traveling, I thought a good theme for a sermon would be journeys and traveling in general. Spend a lot of time traveling, and I spent a lot of time thinking about it. Last week I had to go to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and I had to fly through Denver and Spokane, Washington, and then drive someplace, and 2 days later I had to do the whole thing in reverse. And tonight I'm flying, thankfully, to Italy for vacation by way of Frankfurt, Germany, so I'm like doing a lot of thinking about traveling. And as Dolores mentioned in the opening, I'm also about to start a different journey to seminary in the fall. I don't know how I'm going to balance a busy law practice with seminary, but somehow I'll figure it out. So a famous Unitarian Universalist, Ralph Waldo Emerson, said, "Life is a journey, not a destination." And he also wrote, "We're always getting ready to live, but never living." And Buddha said, Do not dwell in the past. Do not dream of the future. Concentrate the mind on the present moment and stop thinking about the goal and think about what you're doing. I suspect that there are very few among us who need to be convinced of the wisdom of these words, and there's not much I can add to them to bring home their truth and their plain common sense. So the last couple of weeks I've been thinking of ways that I could communicate or share with you ways to actually put that into practice. How do we make our lives such that we really do live for the moment and not just give lip service to the idea of living for the moment itself? And I've come up with a few thoughts that I'd like to share with you, and I'm sure that there are many more. I know that I don't have the whole waterfront covered on this, but a couple of thoughts that came to my mind was on this journey of life to travel as light as we possibly can. And by that I mean take as little baggage along the way. We all, I know, carry love in our hearts, and that's an easy thing. That's like your carry-on luggage that you put under the seat in front of you. But one of the ways, I think, to lighten your luggage is to find forgiveness in your heart and let go of the things that have hurt you. That's one of the things that I've been working on very hard in my own life. And the other thing that came to mind was to try and share as much as life's journey with as many people as you can along the way. In doing research for today's sermon, I came across some words by a person of the Mormon faith. His name is Stephen Covey, and I think he's done a lot of writing in that faith, but something he wrote really resonated with me. He said, "We are not human beings on a spiritual journey. We're spiritual beings on a human journey." Those words resonated with me for a couple of reasons. Since I joined the congregation almost 4 years ago, I've given a lot of thought to my own spirituality. And that process has led me, perhaps inexorably, to going to seminary in the fall. I don't know if you were like me, but when I was in high school, I couldn't wait to graduate, to become an adult in the adult world. Life would surely begin when I left high school. But then for many of us, it's off to college to obtain yet more education. In my case, I took 3 years off to work between high school and going to university. And at the age of 22, I went to the London School of Economics to start my law degree. And I thought, life's going to begin. I'm moving to London. Life's going to really start now. And it wasn't long after I started my studies that I couldn't wait to graduate to take the bar exam. And then, of course, life would finally begin. And so it is with so many of the other milestones in our lives. How many of us think to ourselves, life will finally begin when I get married, or have my children, or get divorced, or retire? We humans have a way of looking to the future that sometimes obscures the worth of the present. It's what makes us human. Few animals, even the ones that squirrel away things in the winter, in the summer for the coming winter months, think beyond what's the next day, the next meal. Few are as capable as we are of looking ahead to the next year and the year beyond. Another writer I discovered on my Google search in preparing for today's sermon was a person by the name of Alfred de Souza, who wrote, "For a long time, it had seemed to me that life was about to begin, but there was always some obstacle in the way, something to be gotten through first, some unfinished business, time still to be served, a debt to be paid. Then life would begin. At last, it dawned on me that these obstacles were my life. School, employment, children, marriage, retirement are all destinations that we want to achieve in life, but it is the journey behind them that defines our lives and who we are. When you accept the intrinsic worth of the journey itself, and grow from the experience of the journey itself, instead of simply wishing that the planned for event will take place, you can truly learn and enjoy so much more. And the passage of time itself is not only inevitable, it is the journey in its entirety. Life is ever-changing, and there's nothing you can do about it. My life has encompassed many different journeys. When I was 21 years old, I moved from provincial England to the United States, and I remember that year of anticipation and bureaucracy as I waited for my visa, and I couldn't wait to get here, thinking, when I get to America, life will begin. And of course, when I came to America for the first time, I got a job in what was the world's, and still is, the world's most prestigious and powerful law firm. Many of you may have heard of the name Sullivan and Cromwell. William Nelson Cromwell was the guy who negotiated the Panama Canal Treaty. There would be no Panama Canal without him. And Sullivan and Cromwell is still the lawyer for the presidents, all the presidents, and all the various heads of state around the world. It's an incredibly powerful law firm. And I was taken from provincial England to this place, and I felt like this is what it must have been like in ancient Rome, you know, like in the center of Rome, the whole center of the empire. This is like where power was. I felt like I was back in ancient Rome. And that was such a journey. Next Friday will be the 33rd anniversary of the day I became a permanent resident of the United States. I shall never forget arriving in New York on August 10th, 1979, with $500 in my pocket, nowhere to live, and a four-week-old daughter. It was quite a journey. But more recently, as some of you are aware, I went on another journey, a different journey. I did the transition from male to female. And that was a different type of trip all on its own, and had its own milestones. Saying goodbye joyfully to 50 years of socialization, in which I was never really comfortable, and embracing the real person that I was terrific. I look forward to that change with much fear and grief, however. Grief for the loss of those who would not share my life with me on that journey. And like all of the other journeys in life, it came with its own milestones. Psychotherapy, hormones, the first day of the real life test, surgery, and beyond. Looking back now, I wish that I had savored those individual steps as much as I now wish I had taken the time to stop and enjoy the other milestones of my life. At the time, though, I just wanted to get it over with because it was emotionally and physically the most difficult challenge I've ever faced. Looking back now, it's clear that I experienced just about everything good that humanity has to offer, however, although mostly from strangers or people who back then were strangers. I felt more kindness, compassion, friendship, and acceptance than any other time of my life. But I also had to come to terms with the fact that many people I knew and loved felt that I had betrayed them by keeping silent about who I was for so long. It's not a good feeling to know that many of the people you love think upon you as another Benedict Arnold. And at the time, too, I felt I was the victim at the hands of unkindness. I remember walking through Montclair and recognizing people, but not being recognized in return. It was like waking up to find the town I lived in had been moved to a foreign country where no one knew me. But this was just one aspect of the journey. And the reading from Genesis, in which Joseph forgives his brothers for selling him into slavery in Egypt, also resonates with me. Joseph realized that if not for his brother's early betrayal, he would not have become close to God. I don't claim to be close to God, although I'm working on it. But my individual struggles have brought me to a place where I am ready to look for religious meaning and spirituality in a way that I never would have done had I not gone through those difficult times. And I, like Joseph, now understand the reason and the need to forgive. As mentioned earlier, in the fall, my journey will include going to Union Theological Seminary in New York City, and I will be following people like Barnaby Feeder and Kimberly Johnson on that journey, and it's a wonderful journey to be on. But this time, as I transition from being a lawyer to a minister, I am determined to really, really enjoy the process and really enjoy school for what it's worth, whatever it may contain. And I want to share something with you about this journey that I just started this summer. On the day that Charles Laughlin asked me if I would take charge of the worship service today, within minutes, I got an email from the seminary saying, oh, by the way, at the end of August, as part of orientation, you have a mandatory test on the Old Testament. And if you don't pass the test, you have to do an extra hour a week of Bible study. So on the day that I agreed to do this, and with all help breaking loose in my law practice, I realized I had to read 1,000 pages of the Old Testament by the end of August. So, and one thing I should share with you, even though I'm going to seminary as a true Unitarian Universalist, I've never read a single page of the Bible, okay? Not a single page. So this has been quite the challenge, it's quite a process. But it's been a formative process, and I've learned so much from it, because I've been reading the Old Testament like a fiend now for the last 3 weeks. And since I have to give the service today, I have to share some of it with you. One of the benefits of growing up in the generation of Star Trek is that instead of having to say, Leviticus, chapter so-and-so, verse such-and-such, I just say, Stardate, Leviticus 27.1. And I'm going to share that with you, because it's so wonderful. Well, maybe not so wonderful. You'll have to make that decision for yourself. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak to the people of Israel and say to them, When a person makes an explicit vow to the Lord concerning the equivalent, and the word equivalent means value, when a person makes an explicit vow to the Lord concerning the equivalent for a human being, the equivalent for a male shall be from 20 to 60 years of age, the equivalent shall be 50 shekels of silver. If the person is female, the equivalent is 30 shekels of silver. If the age is from 5 to 20 years of age, the equivalent is 20 shekels for a male and 10 for a female. If the age is from 1 month to 5 years, the equivalent for a male is 5 shekels of silver, and for a female, the equivalent is 3 shekels of silver. And it goes on. Who knew? I mean, I went through surgery. I spent thousands of dollars. I lost my marriage, and now I'm worth 40% of my former self? This is learning. Again, in preparing for today's service and thinking about the sermon, I also remembered Charlie Ortman's bicycle ride across the country in 2009 and how he shared his journey with all of us in some of the sermons that followed. And that's what inspired me to think about my tip number two, to share as much as you can of life's journey with as many people as you can. And just a couple more tips as to how to live life in the moment and enjoy it. I'd like to share with you what Joseph Campbell said. Follow your bliss. If you do follow your bliss, you put yourself on a kind of track that has been there all the while waiting for you, and the life you ought to be living is the one you are living. When you can see that, you begin to meet people who are in the field of your bliss, and they open the doors to you. I say, follow your bliss, and don't be afraid, and doors will open where you didn't know they were going to be. If you follow your bliss, doors will be open for you that wouldn't have opened for anyone else. Lastly, don't forget the people you meet along the way. Embrace your entire life by accepting that it is one long journey. When you accomplish your goals, you won't only remember what you did, you'll remember how you did it. Ralph Waldo Emerson also said, "It's not the length of the life that matters, but its depth." W.E. Du Bois wrote, "Now is the accepted time, not tomorrow, not some more convenient season. It is today that our best work can be done, and not some future day or future year. It is today that we fit ourselves for the greater usefulness for tomorrow. Today is the seed time. Now are the hours of work, and tomorrow comes the harvest and the playtime. May the prayers of our hearts and the songs of our lips shared in this holy hour of worship be with us now in all the days to come. As we extinguish the chalice, our worship ends, our service begins, and our journeys all continue. Blessed be and amen."